And I just want to let the people from Denver right here know that I actually did steal from Denver. I came here 14 years ago when I was the first elected mayor, and I saw a lot of similarities between the two cities, that they're both center cities in a large rural state. And they had major, great urban centers with great potential. And I saw that Denver was in the lead. And by gosh, I wanted to try to catch up. And I stole as many ideas as I could from Wellington Webb and this great mayor right here. And John, you are doing a great job. And I will say this about John. He's one of the most well-respected mayors in the U.S. Conference of Mayors. In fact, Saturday morning, we're going to see each other in Providence, Rhode Island, talk about trying to influence the Obama administration to put more dollars into transit. And I'm meeting with you at 8:30 in that morning. Appreciate your leadership in that. And John Norquist, he's been a role model for many mayors. He was elected back when I first got on city council, 1988, I believe, right? I mean, this guy got on the cover of Time magazine. He was like God among mayors. Mayors don't get on the cover of Time magazine. And it's because he really stepped out. And what both these mayors, they kept mentioning I was a Republican. You know what's impressive about these two mayors is, for example, John just mentioned in order for the Denver plan to work, he had to go out and reach out to suburban mayors regardless of their political affiliation. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. John recognized that, and one of his goals was to get the Republican mayors in the region to recognize that, and he succeeded. So y'all need to give John a round of applause, too. And Mayor Norquist, thank you very much. Now, in the short period of time I have with you, I want to get across one point more than anything else. I've got to walk around here. I've got to put y'all on the spot here. I'm going to talk to you not as planners, okay? I'm going to talk to you. I'm a politician who is a pseudo planner. In fact, as a small kid, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, moved to North Carolina when I was 9 years old. That's where I got the Southern accent. And you can move there too and get a great Southern accent. I recommend it highly. But I found some pictures in the drawer. I had the difficult job of cleaning out my parents' house after I lost both my parents. And in cleaning out the drawers of my old bedroom, I found drawings of the old Lincoln LeVette building in downtown Columbus, Ohio, and the Scioto River and the Ohio State football stadium, and I drew a grid system of roads. So this guy was an oil and gas engineer. He was probably building a grid system of oil and gas connecting to each other. I mean, we're all urban planners. But I want to talk to you the way we should talk to the public, the way we can talk about the process. And the process is a circle. And it is not a straight line. And I want to talk to you planners. Think of how you're communicating. It's a circle which starts off first with showing people a vision. And part of the vision is showing them what things will look like if you do nothing. It's not a vision of a big, thick book with a bunch of acronyms. I'm going to step on your toes right now. If you want to be a good planner, just don't give us in the community a big, thick book with a lot of acronyms that 99% of the public, including your own city councils, don't understand. Show them pictures of what things will look like if you do nothing, and pictures of things that will look like if you start planning now in anticipation of the future. In fact, Terry, go back to the previous picture, if you can, if you don't mind. Right here. I call this the Corridor of Crap, USA. I can cuss now. This is my last term. I'm leaving office in 5 months. This could be your city, couldn't it? Every city has 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 of these corridors of crap. Which, by the way, as a Republican, these are bad investments because the sustainability is so short that I end up having to put tax dollars back into them to rebuild them. And you know, the sidewalks are crappy, the utility poles, the signs, the road, everything's crap there, except for the good business people inside. I have to correct that because they could be Republicans inside there. But this is what you show to people in the region, not just in your city. As I go out and visit my growing suburbs outside of Charlotte, I go, okay, do you want to do something now or do you want to become like this in Charlotte? And this is a street in Charlotte, North Carolina. South Boulevard. And have you ever noticed when you bring visitors into your city to show off your city, do you ever show them the corridors of crap? No. You take them to the 1920 neighborhoods with the trees and the designs and the mediums and the sidewalks. That's where you take them. You avoid the corridors of crap. And this is what we're trying to avoid in the future. And it's a very compelling argument to present to the public in presenting a vision and showing them what future corridors could look like in an urban center. And this is just a few of those examples. And this is the goal, is to first create a vision. In fact, Terry, if you go to the next slide here, it's a circle. It's a circle centered upon the vision. It's not centered upon a project, whether it's a light rail line or a bus or a trolley or an art center. Don't sell a project. A project has a beginning and an end. That's the definition of a project. This is a process that goes around in a circle. This is how a politician has to think. And it all goes around the vision. And I call this vision, by the way, for me, my first thing is a message. And my message to the people in Charlotte is this. I want the best of both worlds in Charlotte. I want big city opportunities with a small town environment. That's a pretty good selling point, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's a quality of life issue. And I call it the best of Mayberry and Metropolis. You can have the best of both Mayberry and Metropolis. That's why I have Barney's car there. You know, there's a certain feel in Mayberry, and there's a certain feel in Metropolis. That's my vision for Charlotte, is the best of both worlds. And if you think about your new urban planning, the things that you've been talking about for years, that John and others have been talking about for years, you're creating this small town within a big city. You're creating a bunch of small towns in a big city. And that sells. Shazam! So you got to create your message, and it might be a varying message, but if you as a planner can't convey a message, or your mayor can't, or the engineers can't, or the road engineers can't, you're wasting your time, and it can't revolve around a project. Stop the project mentality. Think bigger pictures. And the next step, and I've really reviewed what I did good and bad during the last 14 years of mayor, and I didn't do good all the time. There's some mistakes I made. But one area that always stuck with me as I looked at the corridors of crap was I want things to be sustainable. And if you're building things or creating things that only have a lifespan or 10 or 20 or 30 or even 40 years, it's too short. You have to think 50 to 100 years. So it'll stay there for many, 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 many generations, like they did in Europe, like they did even in the 1920s in most American cities. Those things have value. Even those neighborhoods that turned to blight, we could rebound those neighborhoods better because they were designed right to begin with. See, I stole some things from y'all. I get it. But you got to be able to communicate this. And the next step of the process, I could spend an hour or two or a day on each one of these, but I just want to give you some highlights, and I'm going to whiz through them real quick. The other thing I talk about is don't, for example, when we implemented transit, we're still implementing transit. I still have four more lines I want the city to implement in the next 50 years. But we can't just talk about transit. It has to be integrated into our road plan. This doesn't mean you're anti-roads. It means it has to be integrated with roads. It has to be integrated with our sidewalk plan. It has to be integrated with our bike ways. It has to be integrated with housing. It has to be integrated with economic development plans. And it all has to be integrated into everything you're doing, and this is where your planning director is so important in this room. But just don't think of that one project you're trying to push. The next part of the process is I'm a firm believer in choices. The more choices city has, the more competitive it can be. And believe me, Denver is tough competition for the city of Charlotte. We compete against each other for industry. The question is, how do you talk to people so you can get that message? First of all, as a politician knows, if you can't convey something in 20 seconds on the night news, you've failed. Because they're looking for a sound bite. You better learn how to do a sound bite. You've got to have a 20-second message. You've got to have a 5-minute message. You've got to have a 20-minute message. You've got to have a 30-minute message. You've got to have a half-day message. because you lose them. We could spend a long time on that issue of how to convey the message, and that's one of the processes. And the other part is choices. The choices part right now, I'm convinced that the city that has more choices in housing and jobs and transportation will be the city that survives for the next 25 years in economic development. Now, let me tell you the next thing that I think is very important that I get mad at planners about sometimes, because you kind of poo-ha this thing. Excuse me, I'm going to jump on the left a little bit here. I'm from the right. There's nothing wrong with making money in the private sector. Don't criticize the people who can make money. It is those people who are making money, yes, including the developers, who pay the taxes, who pay for our police and fire and roads and the transit program. I want them to succeed, and I convince them you can make money with a longer-term sustainable project. And it's proven. But you have to sell. If you cannot get the private sector involved in your planning process, you will fail. And I'm not just talking about the neighborhood groups or the grassroots group. I'm talking about the business community and, yes, the evil developers. They all have to be at the table, and they have to understand each other's purposes. And there's a process that we can talk about in the future on how to do that. But making money and creating jobs is very important. What's the number one issue in the United States of America right now? What? Jobs. Nothing comes close to it. Nothing comes close to it. You ask any politician running any campaign, the number one issue is jobs. It used to be education. Education's a distant second. And I know we're all green, we're all environmentalists. Guess where that is? It's not even on the chart. It's jobs and the economy. So think about what your message is to my planning, my buddies in planning. Jobs are important, and I'm not talking about jobs in the public sector. I'm talking about jobs in the private sector, because that's where we're going to grow our base to pay for the public sector. The next thing, part of the steps, this process that constantly goes around, is when you introduce a process, especially when it comes to transit or any other big capital project, you got to figure out, this is the toughest thing for mayors, what is the process for decision-making and governing? Because when you're coming up, mayor, you know this, in a regional thing, you meet with all the towns, they want to know who's got the power, who's going to be making the decisions. And you better start talking about that process at the beginning, not at the end, because that can hijack all your work beforehand. Planners, don't ignore this part of the process, because power is very important to everybody, including planners. But it's really getting into what kind of decisions are you going to make and how are the decisions going to be made. For example, one of the things I'm most proud of is a little thing, but it made a big difference. Instead of having a city council where we determined what bus routes were canceled and increased and so forth, which got very political. You know, you try to cancel a bus route because it doesn't work and you fill up your chambers. And you never cancel it. The politicians chicken out before anyone does, no matter if it makes no sense or not. What we did was we got an agreement. We set up a regional mayor's board, which determined the policy. So once a ridership level fell below a certain point, it was canceled. There was no vote. There was no debate. It was canceled. The politicians voted on the policy. We let the transit manager then say, you didn't meet the policy. It's gone. It didn't keep coming back to the politicians. But that was the form of decision-making that we decided before we implemented the new transit lines. That's an example of making the right decisions but agreeing to it before you start. And that's got to be part of the process. The next thing, we could spend hours on this, but when I inherited the mayor's office, got elected 14 years ago, some predecessors of mine had done a great job in doing a 25-year transportation land use plan. We had a committee of 100. Do y'all do committees of 100? Raise your hand if you've done a committee of 100 in your city. Okay, a few of you have. I don't recommend it. I'd go down to 25 or 50, to tell you the truth. But they actually did a great report, but the problem is no one wanted to deal with how are we going to pay for it. You can't keep ignoring it. Sooner or later, you've got to address it and step off the shelf and give the alternatives. And I hear there are some future speakers maybe later on in the program talking about funding, and I'd love to get involved in that discussion one day for you, because there are many choices, but the choices are tougher now more than ever, especially since last September's crash. And so we are going to have to be much more innovative, because money is very, very tight. So this is where we need to brainstorm. How can we get money, and how can we sell that to the public? The next part of this circle is, this is one when people ask me what the biggest mistake I made during my 14 years as mayor is, I quit communicating with the public about transit. I led this incredible campaign to get the half-cent sales tax passed. I did all these other things that I just talked about, showed the pictures, showed the vision, did everything right. It passed. And then I moved on. I dealt with public safety. I built a new arena. We're NASCAR Hall of Fame. My attention was focused elsewhere, and so was city staff and the politicians and even the planners, because we just handed off to our transit director, and they started building the transit line. Well, during the transit line, costs escalated, negative news, delays, cost overruns. So during that whole time, the public, all they heard was the negative news. That's all they heard. And I'm going, oh, don't worry about it. We've already passed it. Forget it. That's just the troublemakers talking on talk radio. They haven't got any power. Next thing I knew, the troublemakers got 80,000 people to sign a petition to repeal the half-cent sales tax. And the election was 2 weeks before we opened our first line. And had it passed, I don't know what we would have done. We might have gone bankrupt for all I know. I wasn't sure what the solution was. But the mistake I made was I assumed all I need to do is communicate that one time, and during the next 7 years, a lot of new people moved to Charlotte, a lot of the circumstances changed, and it was a strategic mistake on my part. So I had to do some quick recovery and start a whole new campaign. And thank God it survived. By the way, the repeal lost 70%. But it was a pain. But in the long run, it was probably the best thing that ever happened, because it forced us to open our eyes again. Do y'all ever quit communicating on projects? We're great at starting things. We're bad at finishing them. And then once we finish them, we think all you have to do is operate it. But you have to constantly, this is the circle that I'm talking about. Let's just do a couple more. This could be forever. We could talk about this, but this is part of that. We all have to, once it gets approved, you get the funding, you've done your communication, this is the hard work, the construction, the operations. And let me tell you got to stay on top of it, because when that starts going downhill, everything else falls apart, especially in these tight economic times. And you better have a process, both a political process and a management process, on how you're keeping in touch with it, to make sure there's no corruption, to make sure there's good management, to make sure there's good communications, and the list goes on and on and on. And this, again, we could go through a whole process of what you need to do during design, construction, and operations. It never stops, these steps. And the last thing I want to say to you is this, is you got to stay committed. You got to stay committed, and as these two mayors show, you got to have passion about this issue. Don't just pass it off. It's a full-time political campaign. And another recommendation I make to you, even though it's a political campaign, don't do what politicians often do, and planners and engineers do too, and that is exaggerate. Do not get caught in an exaggeration or a miss or a lie, where you say, well, if we implement this, it's going to create this many jobs, and you exaggerate by 10%, or it's going to increase this many, the ridership is going to be this, or you're going to finish it by this time. Don't exaggerate, even by a month or a year. In fact, if anything, underestimate, underpromise, because the opponents will attack you on that exaggeration, which means the rest of your facts are incorrect. Stay committed. Terry, let's show that.
smarter choices about transportation. Or else, he says, our economy will be choked with congestion in the future.
You can wait until the pain arrives and implement change then. It will be an easy sell, but most likely you've waited too long and it'll be too expensive. Or you can anticipate the pain and change now, and most likely the change will work and it'll be less expensive.